are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Of course, because I can never follow the rules, and I just do what I want.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
He's getting bashed for a 39.5% hard hit rate.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And he's got an opt-out, which I'm the anti-opt-out. Of all people who hate opt-out clauses for players, I am on the top of the list.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brents. I'm joined by Evan Peterson. How are you doing tonight, Evan?
I'm fantastic. I had to put the Kendrick Lamar on pause to do this podcast with you guys, but it's Easter. I hope you guys had a fantastic day.
Yeah, I had a good one. We're also joined by Chuck Anderson. Chuck, how are you doing tonight?
Well, to be honest with you, I couldn't be any more frustrated with fantasy baseball right now, and I know it's a grind, and that's why it happens, but the epitome of my week includes the fact that I talked up Andrelton Simmons as a guy that you wanted for all the hurt shortstops, and he immediately goes 2 for his next 19. Then I have my most important long-term league. I have a daily transaction league, so closers are prioritized highly. So I have Sam Dyson, Joaquin Benoit, and Blake Treinen, so I could sit down on a holiday day and watch them all get smacked around, which was a lot of fun in every way, shape, or form. So just grinding it out, and that's what you got to do in this game.
Did you have a good Easter otherwise, Chuck?
It was fine. It was a day off work, I will say that. And I guess the Brewers won, so there's something to be said for that as well. But as I watch Ender Enciarte smack home runs out of the yard.
Yeah!
I found that hilarious. I wanted to bring that up so bad on today's podcast because you had mentioned last week that he's is zero in power, basically. And then he goes and hits 3 home runs this week. He hit 3 all of last season, but he seems healthy to me, so.
He's healthy and he's not cold, which he had to play in New York and Pittsburgh for the first 2 series of the season, and he looked miserable out there. So, good on him.
To add to my misery, to explain to people why I'm grinding it out right now, I'm in my NFBC league. A month and a half ago, I drafted 50 healthy players, and I'm up to 18 of them on the DL, including 5 of them that were originally in my starting offensive lineup. And 3 starters that were originally in my starting lineup. So I'm starting 4 catchers right now in NFBC. So that's phenomenal. But that's the way it goes sometimes, and you got to fight through and hope everyone comes back healthy. I should get Prado back relatively soon.
He's supposed to come back tomorrow.
Yeah, stuff like that comes out as exciting. Trey Turner looks like he's coming off the DL right when scheduled. He's been taking infield practice and batting practice every day. So I guess you got to hope and pray that you pull through it. Somehow I'm still like in the top 4 or 5 in that league. So you just got to go from there. That's the game we play. Sometimes it's nice to you. Sometimes it's brutal. We're at the brutal stage for me.
Yeah, I heard we're supposed to get Posey back this week as well, but obviously with concussions, I never trust until I see him have no lingering effects. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. I don't own any shares of him. Based on our conversation last week, I don't think you guys own any shares of Posey at all either, but our listeners will be happy if he comes back this week, I'm sure.
People who own Giants in the middle of the order will probably be happy too, since they'll have a little more depth. When I see Hunter Pence, the skeleton of Hunter Pence is their cleanup hitter, and all the protection around him is Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford. I think, wow, it's no wonder Mark Melanson's got 1 save opportunity on the year.
Chuck, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
I can be reached on Twitter at Just Chucking It. And every Thursday, I am doing an Of Note weekly fantasy musings article that I want to make sure and promote. So if you guys get a chance, there's a lot of stuff about strategy and some stuff about players every single week. So appreciate your support on that and feedback thereof. It'll be posted on Twitter, on my Twitter feed as well every week. So,
and what about you, Evan?
FWFB on Twitter. You can follow my crazy train of thought and my ADD. It's a good time. Swing on by.
And I am at BBrandsFWFB. Chuck kind of touched on it a little bit early on with the closer situation, so we might as well just go on into it now. But there's a couple of bullpens that have clearly had some changes through the first 2 weeks, I would say. And we could kind of talk a little bit about them and see if there's any players that you're looking to grab. So why don't we just start with the Washington bullpen. Chuck, you told me that you didn't like what you saw from Trinan because he's just not able to stop walking people. So you went and picked up Sean Kelly today. Are you doing that in every league that you have the ability to pick up Sean Kelly? Do you think he may become the closer? Or do you think that this is something that will wash over within the next week or so?
I don't think it's going to wash over. I think they're probably getting towards their wit's end at this point. And since it was kind of an undecided thing till the end of spring training, I don't think he has an exceptionally long leash. They went to Sean Kelly and had him warming up when Trinan was getting in trouble today. Sean Kelly picks up the win when Joaquin Benoit, someone else we could talk about if we wanted to, gave up a three-run bomb to or a two-run bomb to Harper to end the game. But the point being is that it seems like Glover has not really been consistent. He's had some struggles. He gave up a run today. And Sean Kelly was the first person mentioned in the competition early on in spring. He's really straightened things out and looked really good in his recent appearances. So Sean Kelly is where I would put my money in Natty Town, if you will.
It helps that he's not, you know, giving up a home run every appearance like he did for his first three starts of the season. And it helps that Blake Trinan is having some walk issues, although that's nothing new for him. But I still think there's a move to be made as far as Washington's concerned. David Robertson, insert other interesting name that's not Sean Kelly or Blake Trinan. I'm just staying away from either of these guys.
I have no issues being a Sean Kelly backer for the fact that over the last few seasons, he's one of very few players who has averaged the K rate that he has and the 50 plus innings. And it's really helpful that he does K a lot of people, but he doesn't have a lot of health. And while I think he could be a good closer, I think a lot of people could be a good closer in this type of bullpen. Obviously, it just remains to be seen exactly what Dusty Baker wants. And I don't want to go and just rush out to pick up Sean Kelly unless I have an open spot. There's some leagues that are deep enough that I play that I already own Sean Kelly, and I own him for his ratios and his Ks, and that he gets holds. And if he gets saves, then that's great for my other leagues. But if not, then, you know, as long as he's picking up holds, I don't really care. But I do think that Trinan probably gets at least one more chance. I still think that Glover, whatever his name is, I just don't know if he's going to get a chance with Dusty up right now. Dusty hates the young guys, and the fact that they played Trey Turner that much last year was already surprising. I don't think he's going to do it for a second straight season. So, Chuck touched on the Philadelphia bullpen with Benoit. What do you expect to go on for the next few weeks over in Philadelphia, Evan?
Well, he didn't look fantastic. He had a chance to close that game out before it got to Harper, and he was all over the strike zone. And, I mean, that was a meatball. Like, everybody knew that ball was gone as soon as it left Harper's bat today. I am just sketched out because there are other names. But, like I said, you know, you need Hector Neris to get save opportunities. You need somebody to hand over the ninth inning in Philadelphia. Gomez isn't going to do it. I don't know if Benoit could do it for Neris. So Neris is still the name that I like, but I like Benoit better than any name in Washington right now.
The reason I don't think they're going to go with Neris is because of the arbitration. I just think that they're the type of team that doesn't want to have to pay the guy as he's coming into an arbitration season for getting saves. What did happen with Betances this year? They had Betances is far better as a reliever than, 90% of the other relievers in the league, maybe even more than that. But because he's not going to get paid because he doesn't get saves, so he's technically not a closer. So that hurts him in the arbitration. And I think that the Philadelphia Phillies see it the exact same way. Why give him saves and boost his potential arbitration when we can just have him save in a year's time? You know? I don't know if you either of you agree or disagree with that. What are your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, my thoughts on – I watched the Benoit situation today unfold, and he was a bit high in the zone and was missing high. And then he also walked a batter by throwing one right down the middle, right over the heart of the plate that all the K-zone showed as clearly was a strike. So he didn't have very good fortune either. Then I really think, like many people on Twitter said, that with first base open and his run not mattering, I really think that they really needed to walk. They really needed to walk Bryce Harper. And I know it sounds goofy because, you know, because the guy behind him was the runner-up in the MVP in the National League last year. But I still think you're better off just getting the force everywhere and taking your chances with Daniel Murphy instead of Bryce Harper, who already had a home run. So I didn't like the strategic part of it. As far as Benoit going forward, I think Evan is onto it. If they don't use Benoit to close, then who's going to get the ball to Neris to begin with? So the situation doesn't really get that much better for, the Neris owner's excited because he's actually got the gig then, but they're not going to get very many save opportunities if Genmar Gomez and Benoit aren't good anyway. So it makes perfect sense to me from an organizational standpoint that I think Benoit has got to blow like 6 of his next 8 chances for him to lose the job. Because I don't see another viable option within that bullpen, and I don't think there's any way. I do also agree with Ben that they want to start the arbitration clock. They don't want to start arbitration at a higher number for Neris. They're going to use the Betances blueprint, if you will, for keeping his ARB number down.
Do you agree with that, Evan?
Sorry, I got... Yeah, in terms of the arbitration, I totally agree. I got really distracted by Fab processing in the staff league. So,
oh, did that wrong?
Yeah, I got Tom Kohler, Chase Anderson, and Jason Vargas because my pitching staff is complete trash. I got them for a combined $72, and we're going to be talking about a few of those guys today.
That's kind of sad.
Well, are
you trying to make us cry, Evan? Because we might have to cry.
My only other starting pitchers, I dropped Zach Davies in that league. I have Aaron Nola, Steven Strasburg, Jordan Zimmerman, and Joe Musgrove. That's been making me cry for 2 weeks. So I needed reinforcements. Kohler has a 2-start week next week, so I've overpaid for him. Those are my problems. I know nobody cares about them, but it's interesting because we are going to be talking about those names later. So we'll see if I feel better.
I mean, I care about your problems, but just a little bit.
All right, but let's talk baseball. Any other closing situations that you think are in flux, interesting?
Obviously, we have to talk about Texas, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Chuck, why don't you take us a little bit on what happened today and what you think is going to happen with the bullpen going forward?
Well, it's not very pretty right now. Dyson managed to blow a save today, giving up 2 earned runs without the ball ever leaving the infield. He had the misfortune of having a big base runner let on with a bunt with no one covering third, or him not looking at the right base, whichever it was. So there was a lot going on. He did keep the ball down. He didn't let the ball in the air at all today, which was what his comments were between outings that he needed to be down in the zone. He was certainly down in the zone almost to a fall today. He definitely caught some bad breaks today, but when this is he's 0 for 3 on save opportunities to start the season, and he's had some big blow-ups and given up some big home runs. And the comment out of management after the blown save before this, it was that we can't go on losing games this way. So the leash is definitely, to say it's shortened is an understatement. I think they're likely to make a move very soon. And if Matt Busch is 100% healthy, I think it is a coin flip between Matt Busch and Jeremy Jeffress, and that they're likely to announce that they're going to do it by committee outside of Dyson. And I don't know if they're going to be ready with the results. I haven't seen the posted results from the doctor's visit from Matt Busch, but I don't know if they'd be ready to use Busch on back-to-back days. So that may turn it into a very mucky situation. I hear other names. Tony Barnett didn't look very good, gave up a home run today. He throws with a lot of velocity, more velocity than I realized. And I haven't even seen Leclerc pitch this year, but he's a guy who hasn't been used in traditionally there in high leverage situations. So I have a hard time believing that they're going to jump from the front end of their bullpen all the way to the back of their bullpen. So I think Busch and Jeffress are who you speculate on. It's a lot of that depends on Busch's health. That's where I am in Texas.
What about you, Evan?
I have nothing else to add about that. And I know you two were talking before the show started in way more detail than I ever could. But I think Busch is the name that I like here. Let's hear what you have to say, Ben.
I mean, come on. I like Matt Busch a lot. I was saying that after Dyson Blue, I think he's blown, four saves this year or three?
Three.
After his second blown save, and I think there was another outing in which he just performed very poor but didn't get the blown save. I was saying that I think Matt Busch was going to take over the job, and that's roughly when he got hurt. I do think that Matt Busch has the most electric stuff. I think the person who has the second most electric stuff in that bullpen is Leclerc, and I don't really know much about him. Based on his numbers, he does get a ton of Ks this early in the season. Now, that obviously could change, but I still think that he's maybe going to get put into a more high leverage situation going forward. And if that's the case, he could end up closing if that bullpen continues to be kind of abysmal all the way around. But I think that Matt Busch is probably the best go-to person in the bullpen at this time. But because Bannister could keep it as a carousel, I'm really just not sure exactly what's going to happen. But that would be my best guess. Did you guys have any other bullpens? Obviously, Jeremy Familia is going to be coming back on Thursday, so he's going to be taking the closer position away from Addison Reed, who ended up blowing a... he took the loss today. He didn't blow a save. But is there any other bullpens that may potentially change? There's only one more that I can think of.
Well, what about the Orioles?
The Orioles, as of right now, I would say Brad Brock is probably the person you're going to want to go grab, considering that Zach Britton could potentially be out of the season because of his arm issues. Now, that's just something that I think could happen. I don't want to speculate whether he does or doesn't actually get announced out for the season, but I do think that he's in a tough spot considering his arm is all screwed up. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just noticed that they announced right away that they were going to do it with a committee of O'Day and Brock and Michael Givens. Givens certainly has very electric stuff. Darren O'Day is obviously a deception guy, but they are paying him a lot of money. I think a lot of people are jumping to the conclusion that it's Brad Brock on a daily basis, and it may be so. I mean, he's certainly pitched the best of those three guys, even though Given seems to have righted the ship recently. So, there's a few guys to speculate on, maybe some zero-bid guys there, $0 bids, and you'll hold on to them for a week and see what happens. But, you know, the public announcement also says that they're still hoping that Britain is only going to miss 10 days, which is, of course, could just be corporate protocol in this case. So I think that's a very difficult and interesting situation to watch, because that's definitely a bullpen that has created a bunch of save opportunities in recent years. And just to backtrack momentarily, CBS is amongst the outlets that are reporting that Familiar will not close right away when he gets back, which, you know, belies the fact that Reed got punished again today and hasn't looked especially good. And former White Sox fans certainly know how brutal he can be at times. Diamondback fans, too, for that matter. So, you know, just to have all the information out there that I've been trying to gather up, I just wanted to mention those things as well.
The only thought about the Familiar stuff is, do you think that by not dedicating him to a ninth inning role, like, they can just choose to pitch him and shake off the rust as opposed to waiting towards the ninth inning if they go a while without a save opportunity?
Again, I think it's really hard to know how much corporate haze is coming out of this. I mean, I think if Familia looks good, they get a chance to use him early on in a, you know, in a tie game or in a game where they're up by three or four runs. If he looks good, I think the old tendency to use him very quickly as the closer is going to come back in. So I definitely see that in a league where, in any league where you need a bridge, a short-term bridge, I think. If Brock gets the majority or all the chances in Baltimore with how the Orioles are playing and hitting right now, I think that's the guy that I would target as a bridge. And in like a weekly league, when you're looking at him not coming back until the till Thursday already for Familia, I think, you know, if you can find a way to have Brock without busting your fab by any means, I think Brock is the guy that I would want as a Band-Aid to get you till when we know exactly where Familia is. But we don't, it's not like Familia's deal was anything health-wise or anything like that. You know, his strikeout numbers were down last year, but he certainly was efficient and got the job done last year. And, you know, that's the kind of team, limited offense, great pitching, lots of save opportunities. So myself as a Familia owner, I think you can look towards and feel pretty positive about that situation. No one took the job away from him or looked like they could handle the job. So in a way, it kind of worked out good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have no issues with Familia not being put right into the closer role. I'm sure by next week, maybe next Monday or Tuesday, that he'll be back in it. I think, as like Evan said, they kind of just want to get him eased into the situation at MLB level as opposed to being down in the minors and trying to get back into that level. And it's not that Addison Reed's done a terrible job so far, and I think that there's no reason to necessarily just go and demote him back to the setup role. I think they're like, we'll just give him a couple more opportunities and we'll let Familia get back into the swing of things, and then we'll make the switch after an off day within next week. That's how I see it. As for the Orioles situation, Brad Brock's the guy who I'm trying to grab, and I'm not going to try to kill my fab, but I still think that Britton's going to be out for a long term rather than a short term. I don't know if you guys disagree or not with that. What are your thoughts on the injury itself?
I think it's almost impossible to know. I know that forearm, you know, this forearm tightness thing has a really bad history in recent years. So I understand people's concern, but, you know, at the same time, everything is a little bit different. Sometimes you get the slight tear in the UCL and that ends up being Tommy John. Sometimes you get a slight tear in the UCL and it ends up 2 years of Masahiro Tanaka, or like 5 or 6 years of red hot, by the way, big Irvin Santana in Minnesota. So, I mean, it's not foolproof by any means. If somebody tells you they know exactly what's going on there, I think it's pretty safe to say that they don't until we get a doctor's report.
I agree. What do you guys make of the Cincinnati bullpen at this time? Are you guys worried that they're going to just basically take it in a committee type role? Or do you guys just have more faith that Iglesias is going to be the closer for a majority of the year?
I love Iglesias. I don't really know that they need to, you know, think about stretching him out or anything stupid like that. But Iglesias is the name that I'd be trying to target. He's the number two relief pitcher on the player radar right now. So, I mean, I know it's early and that's subject to a lot of variance, but he's been awesome.
What are your thoughts on this, Chuck?
Well, since I watched the Brewer series with the Reds closely, and they used Iglesias, I believe, in the fifth and the sixth inning yesterday, it's not that I disagree with Evan's premise. Iglesias is by far the best pitcher. I think, and just to cover them all so we can get on to our pitchers, etc., I think the Cincinnati bullpen is a lot like the Oakland bullpen, meaning that they're trying to use two or three different players and, you know, with a main two that they want to use, and they're trying to use matchups so they look crafty, like they're Terry Francona or something. Since both teams are absolutely horrible as a generality, I would have to say that if you can avoid these situations, avoid them. If you can't avoid them, go with the best skills guy, which would definitely be Iglesias.
Exactly.
Lorenzen got the save yesterday. I know he had a rough outing this week, but Lorenzen is their second best pitcher. So, but, you know, then you got Doolittle and Casilla. You know, Casilla got pounded in a non-save situation yesterday. I mean, I don't know. To me, these two situations mirror themselves. If you have to dabble, it means you're in trouble. It's the fantasy football equivalent of years of, if you had to have a Bronco running back when it was by committee, you were in trouble. If you had to have a New England Patriot running back, you were in trouble. I mean, it's that kind of a thing. It's not that you can't work around it if the rest of your roster is really solid, but most of the time, if you own these guys, I think you're in a little bit of trouble.
I guess I'm in trouble then.
You're a dynasty animal. You're completely
different than the rest of way us. Different. Way different.
Yeah, I know. No, but I have in one of my redraft leagues, I had banked on Madsen potentially being the closer because there had been nothing indicating that he was not going to be the person who gets the first chance, and he just hasn't got a chance yet. So that was kind of a bad pick by me. Outside of that, everything else has, you know, worked itself out. But why don't we move into the pitchers that we were going to talk about, and we were going to discuss some of the fringy type of pitchers that we had that could potentially be good for the remainder of the season, but we want to at least discuss them because they've been good through the first few weeks. Why don't we start with you, Chuck?
Well, I posed a couple different players, because we all did, and the first one I want to touch on is the one that is probably most prominent and probably less available than my other guy. I want to talk about Luis Severino, who, from our pre-discussions, I believe Evan is quite a bit more down on than me and Ben are, but he's just 23 years old. He was never home run prone in the minors, so the fact that he's had some struggles with home runs as a major leaguer could either be the major league adjustment or the fact that he pitches half of his starts in a bandbox. But this year and I know it's early, but he's striking out 35% of the hitters he's faced, 12.75 Ks per nine early on here with a 1.08 whip. Throughout his career, he's struggled throwing from the stretch or with runners on, if you will. And Evan's going to point out that he has a 0.39 ERA in 23 and a third innings pitched as a reliever, but I don't really know with what is going on in New York. I think they're going to give him an extended look as a starter, so I think that matters less than Evan thinks. So now Evan can start bashing me for my belief in if I wanted to be positive, by the way, Severino traditionally has struggled in Yankee Stadium, and his last start was an 11K, seven-inning beauty in Yankee Stadium. And he's coming up on is a two-start week for a lot of people, but they only play five games this week. So 2 weeks from now, he'll be two starts. Within the next 2 weeks, he'll be two starts in every kind of format. So go ahead, fire away, Evan. Beat me to a pulp.
Well, Severino was way better out of the bullpen last year. 337 batting average against as a starter last year, 105 against as a reliever. You talked about him just getting his brains bashed in at Yankee Stadium. His ERA was over, or it was 8.5, excuse me, as a starter last year. I just don't see it. I think he's going to get the run in the rotation, but I just think that, okay, you've gotten a couple good outings from him. It's got to swing back the other way. And I, like you said, I don't believe in the skill set. He struggles the second time through the order. No, thank you.
I will say this. He's changed his pitch profile. If you look at his pitch effects, he's switched his main secondary pitch. First of all, he's thrown his fastball even more so far this year, but he changed his main secondary pitch from a slider to a changeup. And the changeup has doubled in its value from last year to this year so far. I think there is far more hope for Luis Severino than Evan is giving him credit for.
That's because he doesn't have a hit off the changeup yet. Like, literally, it's zeros across the board. So that's why it's doubled in value, but I don't think that's going to continue.
Yeah, I mean, and that could very well be. I'm just saying that this is my theory. Once you get outside of the top 60 pitchers, for sure, you're taking, you know, semi-educated gambles that no one really knows exactly what's going to happen. And that's going to be a lot about what we talk about tonight when we're talking about these fringy pitchers. And I just think that I have this base theory that people are assuming limited growth from players that are still developing because they're calling up players so young. And this 23-year-old Luis Severino, 6-7 years ago, they wouldn't even have been thinking about bringing him up until he was 25 or 26 years old. So I think there's more growth potential here than what Evan believes. And I agree with Evan that the skill set doesn't look great last year. It really doesn't. No. But there's some encouraging signs. And if you can pick him up and not need him every single week, if you can use him, on occasion or on two start weeks, and see how this develops, I think it's a worthwhile venture. How do you feel about it, Ben?
I mean, I do like Severino. I wasn't a big fan of him having to go to the bullpen, but I think him being sent down last year into the minors and then him coming up into the bullpen helped him work through a couple of his issues that he had. I do think that this year he's still performing relatively well, considering, I mean, yes, it's an extremely small sample size, but his FIP is around just over 2. His Sierra is around 2. I like all of the numbers that are coming out of it. I still have no issues with what his pitch values are. Obviously, like, right now his fastball is not performing very well overall, but I think that it's going to end up performing a little bit better as the season goes on, as it gets a little bit warmer. I just think that Severino is a player that you can actually look at and that you can kind of expect more upside and expect him to do more what he did in the second start than what he did in his first start. I do agree with Evan that he does have some issues going through a lineup a second and potentially even a third time through, but all young pitchers have that, and even some of the more veteran pitchers have that issues, and it's something that he needs to be able to work on, and he hasn't had a lot of experience being able to work through it, because when he struggled last year, they sent him down and then they brought him up in the bullpen. That doesn't give you a lot of opportunity to work through a rotation or through a lineup a second or third time around.
Okay. So he struggles to flip a rotate or to flip a lineup because he doesn't have great secondary offerings. Like, we went over that. And as far as, I just had so many points and they all just went right out of my head. That was ridiculous. I don't know that he's going to be able to continue the walk rate. The home runs, if you take a look at his spray chart from last year, and I'm not even talking about to the corner, like Chuck likes to talk about the band box and whatnot. Like, look at center field. He probably should have had an even worse home run profile than he did. And I just scares the absolute crap out of me.
Well, I think part of our difference here, Evan, is that I really is not really a difference at all. I don't disagree with what you saw last year, and I was very skeptical of Severino going in. At the same time, it was announced that it was an open competition and Severino had to win the job in the spring. He won the job in the spring. The first start came. His first start was not great, okay, statistically. But I heard and saw a lot of analysis that said that there was a lot of positive signs within that start, including some inherited runner scoring, et cetera, that would have made the start look a lot better statistically. Then the second start in Yankee Stadium was dominant with 11 Ks in 7 innings. Like I said, I'm not disagreeing with your skepticism. I guess I'm just saying that I think this is one of the situations that we can look at that's got some positive indicators right now that that if you have the roster space for it, I think you can do yourself a lot worse than trying to see how this goes moving forward, because I don't think 23-year-olds are done developing. That's just
theory. I get that, but I just need to see, like, you see where he struggled in the numbers and where he needs to grow, and I'm just not seeing it. Although you want to talk about him coming in and earning the spot in spring, over 12 spring innings, he did have 2 walks and 17 strikeouts. So, I mean, this is something that, it, like you said, new this year. There is growth. I want to see it for, like, 2 months.
No, and no one blames you for it. But and we're in agreement, actually, because to me, if you don't have the roster space, you don't have to hold him right now. Because if your league is so short that you don't think you have the roster space for a guy like this, then no one else probably does either. So, you know, you can keep an eye on it and you can see what you think in the starts that are moving forward. He's got a home start against the White Sox on Tuesday. That's a pretty good start. And you'll have a pretty good idea of, you know, exactly if the growth is going to sustain. You'll be able to check and see if he's going to have a meltdown, you know, without having to start him in most leagues, because like I said, they only have 5 games this week. So, but anyway, the point being is I think we're closer to agreement than you think, Evan. I mean, there's reasons to look at those numbers and think that last year didn't look very good, but a lot of times these kid phenoms too, I just want to mention, you know, we say, oh well, he's going to end up in the bullpen. Well, we say that like, oh, well, now he's a bullpen guy. But that actually changes a pitcher's entire routine, and it changes, in some guys, it changes their psyche and who they are. You know, Michael Lorenzen is the classic example. He does not want to be a reliever. He's very open about it. He wants to start, you know, so he wants to work long outings, but he'll do whatever the team asks him right now. Well, it doesn't always work. Like, you can't just flip a guy on and off like a light switch. That's kind of like what we do in fantasy terms, say, oh, well, now he's a reliever. But that's not necessarily how it works, and it seems like Severino has devoted himself to being a starter this year, and I think it's very worthwhile to keep track of how he does.
Evan, why don't we move into your player?
Okay. Let's talk Jason Vargas, if you will. My views on the Royals have been pretty well voiced, I think anyways, and they've kind of proven to be what I thought they would be. But Jason Vargas is coming back off the injury, and he's been pretty good in the Royals uniform. 3.7 ERA in 2014, his first full season with Kansas City. 3.6 ERA over the 12 starts between 2015 and 2016. And I really like what I've seen from him going forward. He's actually better on the road than he is at home. I think people would want to lean on a Kauffman crutch argument. And one thing that I'm sure Chuck may enlighten us on, and how it portrays or pretends to his long-term value, is with this being the last year of his deal, do you think the Royals will try and flip him, or do you think there will be any sort of innings limit given his injury concerns? Or Ben, if you have any thoughts on those issues.
Why don't we let Chuck go first?
Well, I do think the Royals are in an interesting situation, a different Royal situation that kind of tells you everything that helps look at what's going on here, is that I noticed today on Twitter there's a number of Royals fans and blogs that are concerned that Ian Kennedy is off to a red-hot start, and he's got an opt-out, which I'm the anti-opt-out. Of all people who hate opt-out clauses for players, I am on the top of the list. So they're already worried about that. Well, we all have heard that the Royals are in big trouble as far as their class of free agents going into next year. Although I did notice that their shortstop that they got from the Brewers, he is not playing very well. Escobar is not playing very well right now. But Moustakas is off to a pretty good start. And Hosmer is a guy who I think is going to hold a lot of value on the free agent market, regardless next offseason. So I do believe that if they fall out of it, which is pretty likely to happen, that Vargas could end up on a different team. But I also think going to a contender could help his value overall next year by for the end of the year this year quite a bit. So that part of it per se doesn't bother me. As far as, I mean, I wanted to see exactly what we're looking at for velocities for him, since he missed a lot of last year with his injury, since he's coming back now. So, you know, and he looks relatively like he's throwing about the same velocity as he was before he got hurt last year. So I do like to see that. And he's throwing five pitches again, like he was last year. So there's some hope for that. He was always a crafty lefty type that rarely hits 90 miles an hour. So I think he's okay as a fill-in or a streamer. I think it's unlikely that you're in a league where you have to rely too heavily on Vargas. But again, you're going to use a couple spots and you're going to try and figure out, you know, just a conjecture spot, if you will, about what's going on. And he is a guy who is trying to salvage his career right now. And he had on and off success before he got hurt and before he was a Royal. And so it's something that Evan pointing this out means I will follow it pretty closely. How do you feel about Jason Vargas this year, Ben?
I mean, I like him so far through the small sample size that we have. Obviously, his FIP is going to be larger than the 0.66 ERA that he has, and the XFIP is going to be higher because he hasn't given up any home runs yet. But I do like that he's going to be the type of player that will end up getting ground balls. He is a crafty player, just like you were saying, Chuck. The left on base, I don't expect it to stay at 91.7, but if he's able to hover into 80-plus percent, then I think he'll be in a good spot. And I do agree that he is basically pitching for his next contract, obviously, because he's going to be a free agent. And I do believe that he could end up pitching his way onto a new team next year. But I do think that he's the type of player that, when he's healthy, he's able to give you decent stats. And in a deep league, a guy who's able to stay healthy if he is and give you decent quality starts, kind of like Irving Santana has. They're not overwhelming, but they are good, decent stats. I think that's something that you can benefit from in a deeper type league. Evan, how big of a league are you looking to add Jason Vargas in, or what's the smallest league that you're looking to add Jason Vargas in?
It'd have to be like a deep 14-team league or like the 16-team league where I have a proverbial gun to my head as far as my pitching is, and I just need somebody.
I'll trade you pitching in that league because I do need steals. Just so you're aware, I'm leading team in league in strikeouts and wins or quality starts, whatever we're playing. Considering I didn't even know what format we were in.
Yeah, I mismanaged my roster over the first 2 weeks, and I think I can turn around my pitching stats here pretty quick. So, no thanks. But I'm really excited to talk about either one of your fringe guys. So, which one would you like to talk about first?
I'd like to move to CC Sabathia. I think that Sabathia is the type of player that is actually going to be able to have another good season. Now, last year, he didn't have a great season last year, but it was an improvement from the year before. Last year, he had 179.2 thirds innings. 152 Ks isn't anything great, but, you know, it's at least consistent that he's getting a few Ks per game. And he had a sub-4 ERA last year. The WHIP was high at 1.32, but he did walk a lot of players. But I think that he's the type of player that could end up having maybe even a better season as he continues to get healthier. And as the Yankees potentially get a better overall team with all the trades that they made over the last year, But right now, his season ERA is 1.47 through three starts. He's got a whip at just over one. He's got two wins. You know, he's only got 11 Ks through 18 innings, but he's done a pretty good job as being one of the better pitchers for this team as of right now. What are your guys' thoughts on Sabathia going forward for the next few months? Let's just even say, what are your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, he's already 36 years old. He's got an option year that I think is his option after this year. It's ironic that we're speaking about him right after I said that I am the number one person I know that is against player options, opt-out clauses, because he's a guy who's getting massively overpaid. Not that people worry about it because they just call it Yankee money anyway. But, you know, with me being a guy who follows a smaller market team, you would know why I would be against these kind of contracts, because it basically means the team can't win the contract. Like, it's not been a good contract for CC Sabathia to me under any circumstances, even though he's won a World Series. But the point being is that during the Yankee broadcast today, they were talking about how CC Sabathia has gone from a full transition from a hard-throwing pitcher to a finesse lefty now, which is why you're not going to see the strikeout numbers that you got back in the day when he was a Cy Young-type player for the Indians. But the point being is that, you know, being a lefty, there are advantages as far as pitching in Yankee Stadium, meaning that the right field porch, usually lefties are take away the power field for left-handed hitters, so that helps. And he is on a performance arc of getting back to respectability. I got him very late in NFBC. I feel pretty lucky to have him right now with all the injuries that I've sustained in that league. Aaron Sanchez going to the DL being the most recent one. But the point being is that I think Sabathia over the next couple months has a chance to have a pretty decent run and be very viable as an innings eater and a guy who has a chance to put together some wins and just some stopgap consistency. I don't think you want to, hang your hat on him as somebody that you're relying on to carry your staff, but you got to have staff fillers at the end of your staff. And in larger leagues, I think CC Sabathia is trending in the right direction from almost any number that you look at. And the team is hot right now, so maybe that's making our outlook a little rosier than it should be. But CC Sabathia is playing mentor on that pitching staff, and I think he will be serviceable for the rest of the year. How do you feel about it, Evan?
Well, if you would have told me the Yankees were going to start off 8-4 to begin the year, I probably would have laughed you under the table. But they're on a tear right now, and so I do think the wins will be there for CC. He looks good coming after the knee cleanup. I was reading a piece in the New York Post that had a quote from Girardi about him becoming more creative. So totally echo everything you said in that sentiment. And I mean, I like Sabathia until either injury pops up or he gave up 18 home runs Independence Day and after last year. So until the home run issues rear their ugly head, but he's a decent end game play. I probably would take him over a Jace Vargas type. And I forget who else we already talked about, but I'm CC Sabathia. I'm intrigued this year.
Yeah. Obviously, like I was saying before, his numbers are going to change. Obviously, like the biggest discrepancy right now for him is that his FIP is basically 2 runs higher than what his ERA is. But I think that if he has a sub-4 ERA, then basically given what his price point was at the beginning of the season, that's considered a win by both of you guys, wouldn't you say? With the sub-4 ERA and probably a 1.3 whip or lower.
In the zone that he's getting drafted in, that's certainly an acceptable outcome. I don't think there's much doubt about it.
Chuck, why don't we move into your next player?
Okay, well, my second player, I try to get deeper when I can here, and this is going pretty deep, but Martin Perez is a 26-year-old for the Rangers. He's right now over 6 walks per 9 this year, and no projection system had him over 3.5. But he is up to over 7.5 Ks per 9, and he only did 4.7 last year. So he has a 2.20 ERA right now, but his FIP is 4.84. He's a career 53% ground ball guy, but right now it's down to 43%. So there's a lot of mixed things going on here. He's got a 95% strand rate so far this year, which is, obviously is something that can't keep up. And his home run per 9 is up to 1.1, and that's in cold weather relative to how things heat up in Texas in the middle of the season. So Texas is a team that needs starting pitching depth. They've seemingly needed it for the last 3 or 4 years. And the results have been better than the peripherals so far this year. So I'm curious to see if Martin Perez can actually keep up the good stats that he has while getting closer to reasonable projections on the peripherals. So, Martin Perez is my guy, and I'm wondering if you guys have any interest or if you guys think I'm grasping at straws here. What do you think, Ben?
I sorry, Chuck, to say, but I kind of think you're grasping at straws a little bit. I mean, Martin Perez he has the potential to be decent, but I just don't think he's going to be, especially with that walk rate. Now, if he gets it down, then I can believe in him a little bit more. But because of the walk rate right now, his FIP is more than double what his ERA is. His XFIP is basically double what his ERA is. He has a BABIP of .348, which is excruciatingly high, and he's got a left on base of 95.4. That left on base just isn't going to stay there. So the second that stops staying at that level, he's going to keep giving up runs. And yes, the BABIP may come down and it may regress to the mean, so they both may regress to the mean, but I still think that he's going to climb closer to that 4.0 to 5.0 ERA. I think he's going to have a higher whip. I don't know if he's going to actually be able to control all of the walks, because I'm surprised that it's this big of an issue for him already. He's walking people at a 15 plus percent clip, which is absolutely horrendous for a starter, especially when he is a sub 20% K rate. So I can't invest in him right now. What are your thoughts, Evan?
Yeah, you brought up the K rate, and that's the biggest thing. He's a career 5.5 guy. He's 7.7 as of right now. Not really buying that. And you'd say that he probably just needs to get more aggressive as his first strike percentage is below his career average. However, it's not like he's doing great even when he gets off into favorable counts. On 0-1 counts, only 5 pitchers have higher walk rates than him, and it's not promising company. Matt Shoemaker, Jose Quintana, Derek Holland, Jordan Zimmermann, and Matt Andrees. So definite issues there, and like I said, I don't expect the strikeout numbers to keep up. He's getting bashed for a 39.5% hard hit rate. He's played the Indians, the Mariners, and the... just had it pulled up who the other team was. It was the Athletics, who actually had the highest hard hit percentage, even though they're probably the worst offense of those three teams. But I'm not buying it for Martin Perez, and I also think you're grasping at straws, Chuck.
Well, I mean, it's one thing exploring the fringe will do. I mean, you definitely get to the point where you look at players and you say, well, I don't like this as an investment right now. But I do think it's curious that, this 2.2 ERA that he's sporting right now, when it doesn't seem to be like he's pitching very well, maybe it feeds into some confidence for him, gets him an extended look, and maybe he starts pitching a little bit better. I certainly don't disagree with you guys. He's not a player I'm targeting to try and save my season. He's just a guy right now that I'm trying to figure out. Somehow or another, he's getting it done right now. And I want to see if he can sort of extend out his success in the ERA. And then that would help him a lot as far as wins going forward. And like I said, I certainly think the Rangers need him. So we are more than welcome to move on to our next player. Of course, I think this might be, I think we're back at Evan. So I think we're going to do a player comparison, if I'm correct.
Of course, because I can never follow the rules, and I just do what I want. And I'm sure Chuck has expounded on both of these guys being that they're Brewers, but I don't believe I've ever had a chance to sit down and have a conversation with him about Chase Anderson and Jimmy Nelson. And Chase Anderson, we'll start with him because he's the guy that I won in FAB in the Staff League. I liked him a little bit back when he pitched for Arizona. The previous three seasons against right-handed hitters worry me. He's had batting averages against of 309, 272, and 297. So I kind of like to see that cleared up. He's off to a great start. 151 in that department. Small sample sizes and whatnot are definitely in play. But the other stat that I'm also interested in with Anderson is how he does as he turns the lineup over, which he struggled with. But last year, in his third time through the order, he had a 202 batting average against. There was some slight BABIP influence, but I think, you know, we talked about young guys' growth, et cetera, to steal a term from Chuck. So I do think that he can be very valuable for teams this year. Other than a Nolan Arenado solo shot, he's given up five other hits over 13 innings. And Jimmy Nelson, I don't know if he's going to keep up what he's doing. He was the league leader in walks last year. He's got two over 13 innings. And I know I was reading some articles about the adjustment he's made in his delivery. I hope Chuck has a little more information on that. I don't know if it's repeatable. And I think given the two options, I would go Chase Anderson over the course of the long haul. Am I wrong, Chuck?
Well, I think you're wrong from an upside standpoint. I don't know if you're wrong in practicality. I mean, within the organization, within organizational roles, I can tell you that, you know, that the Brewers have a long history invested in Jimmy Nelson, and Jimmy Nelson definitely jumped off the radar with some outstanding seasons in the PCL, seasons well under three for his ERA. I believe it was under 2 1 year. And so there was a lot of hope with Jimmy Nelson. If Justin was on our podcast, maybe he would think that he's, harnessing special powers through his beard, because Jimmy Nelson has gotten a little bushy this year, and he never really had a beard before. But Chase Anderson is a guy, 29 years old already, is something that, you know, kind of wasn't mentioned in your overview. And every once in a while you see people sort of find a nuance and learn how to pitch later in their career. But I think it limits his long-term upside. Chase Anderson's a guy they got via trade. I always think it was part of the Segura trade. But the point being is that Chase Anderson's a guy who really got blown up a lot last year, and there really wasn't a whole lot expected out of him. It's sort of always been painted that he was a guy that was brought into the organization to suck up innings while they were trying to rebuild the organization. So this little stretch of really good pitching that we have now that I don't think anybody thought was coming seems a little bit more out of nowhere to me. I would rather have Jimmy Nelson going forward. Again, I don't like to hedge my bets on players that I don't have a lot of belief in that pitch in a really bad setting for that, you know, increasing their possibilities of getting blown up. So as much as it hurts me to say this, I would prefer to not have to invest in either one of these guys long term, but Jimmy Nelson is the guy within the organization, and being a lot younger, that I think the Brewers are especially pulling for. So Chase Anderson has pitched well enough that I think his spot in the rotation is secure when Garrett gets back, which is still, 3.5 weeks to 4 weeks away. So there's something to be said for that. And I know there's deep enough leagues out there that you have to speculate on guys who are just getting it done. But I saw very little I liked out of Chase Anderson last year. And 2 years ago, Jimmy Nelson was a very hot prospect that people liked. So I'm going to gamble upside on two guys that are pitching surprisingly well. I'm going to gamble on upside and youth and go with Nelson over Chase Anderson. How about you, Ben?
I personally like Jimmy Nelson more than I like Chase Anderson, and I have no issues with Chase Anderson. I just, there's a lot to not like about how his season is going thus far. He has a 100% left on base percentage. Obviously, that's going to come down. Now, Jimmy Nelson isn't a lot better. He's at 94.3, but Jimmy Nelson's at a 47%+ ground ball rate, and Anderson is sub 42%. His Anderson's FIP is about a half a run higher than Jimmy Nelson's right now, and same with his xFIP. He doesn't K as much, he walks people more, and his BABIP is about 80 points less than what Jimmy Nelson's is, and it's probably about 130 points less than what the normal MLB average is. So obviously all those things are going to work against Anderson. Now, they'll work against Nelson to some degree, but they won't have to even out as much. I personally like Jimmy Nelson for the last few years. I like the upside that he brings. I do see that there is some higher floor in Chase Anderson. I just don't know if he's able to keep it because he is going to walk people occasionally. He's going to have people get hits off of him, so that ERA and that whip is going to go up. And he's not the biggest K guy in the world, so that's a big negative for him. I still think that Nelson has a lot of ability to perform well, but I would have to go on the upside here.
It should probably be mentioned, too, that Chase Anderson, with him not being a guy that sort of has been painted as a long-term option for the Brewers, I mean, if he was to pitch relatively well until trading season started, he could get traded into a better situation than he's in right now. As far as, you know, the Brewers being a young team that don't always play good defense and being in such a bad pitching environment, as far as, you know, trying to keep your numbers decent. So there is some extra upside there. I mean, I do think both guys are worth tracking. And I just, like I said, I always tend to go with the guy who's considered to have the better stuff and is considered younger and has the better pedigree when the two guys are close. So it was a good comparison because it's close, but we both prefer Jimmy Nelson, and now you can tell us why we're fools, Evan. That's your role in life.
I get it as far as the upside. Like, Nelson has more of a strikeout potential. I mean, just anecdotally, and I was even noticing this as I was reading some articles for research on Anderson, was that in a lot of games last year, he was, a little bit later, fourth, fifth, sixth innings, he was carrying a lot of no-hitters in. They mentioned one where he had a late-inning perfect game run against the Cubs at one point in time. Maybe it's bias, like I said, because I've gotten dicked over by Jimmy Nelson before, and B, like I said, I was a big Chase Anderson guy. I thought just getting out of Arizona would have been fantastic for him, but like you said, Milwaukee's not always the most forgiving place to pitch either. I don't know. I if you're talking ERA at the end of the season and you want to put a bet on it just to make things interesting, I'll go Chase Anderson under Jimmy Nelson.
Well, you can call me in on that one. I prefer Jimmy Nelson, but unfortunately, as an honest-to-myself Brewer fan, I think Jimmy Nelson's ERA at the end of the year ends up about 4.3, and Chase Anderson ends up about 4.9. So I don't really know that either guy is worth bragging about.
Well, no, not at all. But.
Evan, are you considering starting Anderson tomorrow against the Cubs?
Given the size because of the I picked league. Him up. Given no, the size,
just, of just given the size of the league, and how Anderson has performed thus far, do you think that starting him against the Cubs is an option that you'll actually consider, or is this still a player that you're going to be looking to stream 95% of the time?
Yeah, it's definitely a streaming thing. I don't think, like you said, you realize how bad my options are in that league. But he pitched decent against the Cubs last year, and I may look at rolling him out. We'll see how drunk I get tonight.
Fair enough. why don't we move into the last player, and that's going to be me talking about Brett Anderson. Anderson, who is far from the picture of health, has made it through two starts, which is pretty much an accomplishment for him. But he's playing for the Cubs, so because of that, the Cubs seem to be getting magic out of every single player that they seem to use. Do you guys have any interest this year at all in Brett Anderson in a very deep league in terms of the potential for wins or the potential for him to have decent numbers because of the defense behind him? Why don't we start with you, Evan?
I'm curious, of the names that we've mentioned, what names do you have Brett Anderson over?
I don't know if I have Brett Anderson over any of them. I don't think I'd necessarily start him over any of the other players because his strikeout rate is going to be the worst of all of the players. He's not a big K guy. He has walked players, so that's not going to be very good. The reason I would grab Anderson is because the Cubs have seemed to make players miraculously better or healthy, or they've just done a good job with how they've run the team over the last few years. They're the best team in baseball, so they'll definitely get wins. So in a wins league, he's going to provide you value.
Yeah.
And even in a quality start league, he could sometimes get you six innings and only give up two or three runs because of how good the defense behind him is. I think the defense behind him will help. I think he's more beneficial in a wins in a quality start league because he's less likely to have to go deep into a game. But I do think that, like right now, his FIP is around 3.22. So I think it could hover around 3.75 to 3.9 for the season, which isn't terrible given how deep of league you would need to add him in. His XFIP is a lot higher. It's a 4.57. So that is something to watch out for. But that's because he hasn't given up a home run yet. So obviously that's going to change at some point. But I do think that he's a player that you could have in a super deep league if you need wins and if you need decent-ish ratios potentially.
Yeah, well, I want to see the ground ball rate. I want to see some health. I agree with what you said about being a wins pitcher for sure. But Steamer has him projected at 84 innings to start off this season. What number would you want to play over under with Brett Anderson at?
I would still say probably around 80 innings is where I have him going, maybe a little bit longer. But I wasn't expecting him to have a super healthy season. The biggest thing I like about him in terms of pitching is that he's like a 58% career ground ball guy, and given how good that infield defense is, that will help. And then you still got Hayward out in the outfield, and Schwarber sucks, but if Almora or Jay is playing, there's decent defense there. So you only have one real defensive liability, and that's in left field. But given how good of a ground ball pitcher he is, if he's able to, get those ground balls, then that's good. But I can't expect more than 80 innings. But I think anything over 80 innings is pretty good, and that's still going to be about, 14 to 15 starts maybe for him, maybe a little less, given how deep he goes into games.
Is it my turn to rant now?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Evan was asking anything else on top of the over-under.
No. I want to hear Chuck's thoughts.
Yeah, Chuck, what do you have to say on this?
Well, Joe Maddon is a guy who not only wants to screw with fantasy owners with his various lineup chicanery, but he also is a guy who really loves to use his bullpen and overuses bullpen almost. He's this new age manager that believes that you avoid making your starters go through the lineup a third time, especially all of your lesser starters. And either for health reasons or for for either for health reasons alone or because of this Joe Maddon theory. You're looking at a guy who hasn't pitched more than 5 2/3 in his first two starts, despite the fact that he's pitched well. He's only given up one earned run. So this is going to limit his upside as far as wins are concerned. And this is the kind of pitcher that I find most frustrating to own. Joe Maddon has been, you know, did this to Jason Hamill as well. Hamill would be pitching great, and he'd come out and pull Hamill from the game. And you could see the look on Hamill's face, like having no idea why he's getting pulled. So you add the health to Joe Madden's penchants for this, and this is one of the last guys that I would want to invest in anything more than a two-start week, where me thinking that, you know, getting maybe 10 1/3 or 10 2/3 innings is more than other people in my league are going to get from one starter that week. I don't like investing in players like this fantasy-wise, and I know everything that you guys are saying has validity to it, etc., but I think part of the idea of picking people up is the hope that the guy can turn a corner and really be somebody that you can use with some confidence. And when Joe Maddon gets in this mode with a pitcher, it really wouldn't matter. Joe Maddon would pull Brett Anderson after six innings if he was throwing a no-hitter and had averaged a little over a pitch per guy. That's how I feel about Joe Maddon and the way that he's used the back end of his pitching staff in recent years. And I don't want any part of it.
You really think Maddon would pull Brett Anderson if he was having a no-hitter and he threw like 25 pitches? Because that's the scenario you just crafted for us.
That's exactly what I think. He thinks he's a wizard and he can do whatever he wants and he's changing all the rules, et cetera, and so forth. You know, I can go on for hours about stuff like this, but Albert Elmora is their best defensive outfielder, and he's hit the ball great this year. He has 13 at-bats on the year. 13 at-bats. So he can play John Jay, and they can pay $100 million to Jason Hayward. So if you think that he's not stuck in his ways, the sample size, Elmora was their best hitter in the spring. Elmora's been one of their best hitters, and you can't find him any at-bats. This is the kind of locked-in thinking that you get out of Joe Maddon that might work on a regular basis. You know, it certainly did last year. Everything fell right for him. But I wonder how it's going to go long-term there. You know, which I've mentioned before, and it's just I do believe that if he had a low pitch count, but he was still Brett, and he's still Brett Anderson, he's still got a history of injuries. Now he's got an excuse to pull the guy out of the game. He didn't even have an excuse for Hamill, and he kept pulling him when he looked great. So to me, this is that kind of situation. This is a situation I'm 1,000% avoiding.
Why you got to hate on Jason Hayward? He's got hits in every game but one. Granted, he's only got one extra base hit, but, I mean, why you hating, dog?
Well, you know, you might have some love for him when he was
a
Brave.
When he was a Brave, yeah.
Yeah, that might be what's going on here. But it's still a long, balky swing. It's still – there's no way if you see him roam around in – center field, there's no way he's as good a center fielder as Jay or Elmora, but he's still playing all the time. I am surprised how much Schwarber has played, especially how often he's stayed in late in games, etc. So, you know, it's not like you can always predict these various Maddenisms properly. But like I said, I'm just it's beyond me that you would use a young player the way they're using Elmora. Elmora should be playing every single day, and they don't seem to care that he's toiling away on the bench, you know, at 10% of his possible utility.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Who do you think will end up getting more innings when the season is done, Rich Hill or Brett Anderson?
Oh, yuck. Can we just say that the Danny Salazar and Rich Hill, who will have more innings pitch conversation, that was absolutely hilarious. I fucking hate Rich Hill, but Brett Anderson is probably on the same level. I don't care.
Well, you did ask the question, so you must care, so I must pose an answer. And if I'm going to pose an answer, I'm going to say that whenever Hill pitches, they're at least going to try and pitch him. And they're not going to restrict how much he pitches, even when he's effective. which is certainly what I think is going to happen with Brett Anderson. So if somebody put a gun to my head and said, what did I think was going to happen since Brett, since Rich Hill's injuries all seem to be sort of semi-manageable, yet at this point, I would still take Rich Hill because I think those 7 to 8 inning outings will build up a lot faster than, you know, Brett Anderson still having yet to pitch 6 innings. And then you got to add in as much injury risk in Brett Anderson as there is in Rich Hill. So I will take Rich Hill and I will feel very, very like a very dirty human being for taking him in any bet involving durability.
Fair enough. Chuck, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Not really. I mean, I like I said, Brett Anderson, I do think he's going to pitch relatively, he's going to be relatively effective when he's healthy. And I understand your points about the defense being decent behind him. I just think the upside is so limited when you put all of the variables together. Like I would, I mean, obviously they're drafted miles apart, but a guy like Rich Hill, I would rather have Rich. If I knew Rich Hill was going to be out for the next 6 weeks, I would still rather have Rich Hill for the rest of the year than Brett Anderson, because these little 5-inning starts, when you think about it, that does, even when they're effective, it's, you know, that's like having a long reliever for the week. That's not having a starter. So, you know, and the K rate isn't jumping off the page. So I just, you know, I have a very solid conviction in this, that Brett Anderson is a better real life pitcher than he is fantasy, even when healthy, for the rest of this year.
Fair enough. Chuck, why don't you give our tell our listeners where you can be reached and once again what you're working on.
Okay, well, I can be reached at Just Chucking It, and once again, Of Note will come out every week on by Thursday at the latest. So I hope to hook into some listeners and have them read my stuff, because it's little blurby style stuff. So it's nothing that you have to devote you know, half an hour of solid reading on. It's not like reading War and Peace on a Bridge or anything crazy like that. So hopefully people start getting back to me with questions about that at Just Chucking It. And other than that, I do 2 podcasts a week. I'm lucky enough to be able to touch base with Ben Brennis, Evan Peterson, Darius, and Justin. So my life is still golden. So we go from there.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. And what about you, Evan? Where can listeners reach you and what are you working on?
At EvFWFB on Twitter. I'm debating on whether or not I even want to like dabble in writing for baseball or just kind of wait until next year. I'm kind of getting interested in football already. But just hit me up on Twitter. Questions, comments, concerns. Leave us a rate and review too. That really helps us out. And we love you for it.
Yes, Evan will love everyone who gives a rate and review so much. Just remember that he'll love you very much. I am at BBrandsFWFB. I was hosting our Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast. We're still doing some off-season content. We're finishing up some dynasty ranks, and we're going to be looking into the upcoming NBA draft, as well as looking at how some players could be changing teams for the upcoming season or free agency. Outside of that, I will be hosting our Tuesday show for baseball, as I am currently doing right now, and I will be writing some articles, mostly focusing on pitching, either with points leagues or two start weeks as the season goes on. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.